Well, I think one thing we're going to do right out of the gate is define what pro-life is.
Scott Klusendorf talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That term is now being confused. It's being put up for grabs, and we're going to make clear what the pro-life syllogism is, how we can make that case for life with people who don't accept biblical authority, who maybe don't even know what it is we stand for, and are subject to being confused. So there's a crying need to clarify what pro-life means, what our actual arguments are, and then we'll look at five bad ways people argue against the pro-life case in the public square so that we can be prepared to give good, solid, Christ-honoring answers.
You can meet and hear Scott Klusendorf making the case for life at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Learn more about conference speakers and topics and register at issuesetc.org. Does it matter in this age where the sexual revolution has taken to the courts and pushed every single statute it could to its logical and then its illogical conclusion, what a law was originally written to address, what those who wrote it and who passed it intended it to mean and how they intended it to be applied? Does that even matter anymore, especially when courts can expand or contract the meaning of the words in a law? Do the words then matter? We're going to be talking here about the federal court's application of sex discrimination laws to transgender individuals. This is an example of exactly that. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Monday afternoon, the 12th of March. Margo Cleveland will join us for the first few minutes here to talk about federal courts kind of unevenly applying. Some courts are remaining in the realm of sanity. Others are saying that Title VII and Title IX were and are about transgender individuals. We'll talk about that. Dr. Andrew Steinman will be with us in the latter part of the hour. Some are comparing President Trump to Old Testament King Cyrus. Why are they doing it? What's the comparison actually mean? And we're not talking about just a few individuals. We're talking about Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. We're talking about Lance Wallnau, Ken Ham, and others who are making this comparison. What should we make of it? And does it hold scriptural water? We'll talk about that a little later here on Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about the federal court's application of sex discrimination laws to transgender individuals, Margo Cleveland. She's a regular guest. She spent almost 25 years as a permanent law clerk to a federal appellate judge, former full-time faculty member and current adjunct professor at the College of Business at the University of Notre Dame. And she's senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column there titled, "What the Federal Courts Are Getting Wrong About Transgender Discrimination in the Workplace." Margo, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
We're going to be talking a lot about two federal laws and several court cases that are variously applying those laws. Title VII and Title IX, were they written in order to apply to transgender individuals?
No, absolutely not. Both statutes use the word sex in them. Title VII applies for discrimination in employment. It defines certain protected classes, so race, sex, color, national origin, and religion. And sex under that statute was very clear. It meant biological sex, male, female. Title IX, which applies to institutions that receive federal funding for educational activities, so high schools, grade schools, colleges, along those lines, and it only protects the class of sex. And again, it had the same meaning, male, female. And that was really what was understood at the time that those statutes were passed. And until recently, it was pretty clear the courts were unanimous on that as well.
So what has happened here? I mean, take us through some of the recent court activities.
Sure.
Where Title VII and Title IX's application has expanded.
So it's probably been going on about 2 or 3 years, and I think a lot of people are familiar with it from the kind of the bathroom battles in the schools, which would be under Title IX. But it's also advancing under Title VII, where you have employees that are claiming that it's sex discrimination if you do not affirm, basically, their belief of what their sex is. And the most recent one came out last week, which was a case where the EEOC actually brought it. So the federal agency brought it against a funeral home that is actually located in Michigan, has, I think, three different facilities. And there was a gentleman who worked there for about 5 years as the funeral director. And then he announced that he was transitioning to become a woman, and that on returning from a vacation, he would start dressing appropriately, which for him meant as a female at the workplace. And this funeral home had a dress code which applied to men and women. For men, it was a suit and a tie, and for women, it was a blazer with a skirt. And he wanted to follow the female dress code, even though he is a man. And he sued, and the court allowed part of his claim to go forward, but not all of it. On appeal, the Sixth Circuit entered a very broad reading and said that sex includes discrimination against transgender individuals, but they actually went further and basically said that you have to allow him to follow the dress code for women.
So what did they do wrong in that case, the Sixth Circuit?
So the Sixth Circuit and other courts that have been looking at it, what they've done is they've looked at a case from the Supreme Court called Pricewaterhouse, in which a woman who was up for partner was declined partnership. And there were a lot of sexist comments made by the other partners. And in the case, the Supreme Court said that sex discrimination hits the whole context of the workplace. And if you have sex stereotyping, that can be evidence of sex discrimination. So the first problem we have are the courts are saying that under this case, Pricewaterhouse versus Hopkins, sex stereotyping is sex discrimination. And first of all, that's not what the Supreme Court said. They said it could be evidence of it. But secondly, when you are treating a man as a man, that is not sex stereotyping. That's based on reality, that you can't change your sex. And it is not sex stereotyping to say that a man who is a funeral home director must follow the dress code. So there were actually two errors there. One, they said it's sex stereotyping and sex stereotyping is illegal, which is not true. But two, it's not sex stereotyping to say that if you are biologically a man, you are biologically a man and that can't be changed.
So in this case, the Sixth Circuit has not only misapplied Title VII, they've also misread the Supreme Court in that precedent.
Right, they have. And that is something where this case, the Pricewaterhouse versus Hopkins case, you're seeing this in the lower courts where several of them are misreading the case and other ones are correcting them and saying, no, that's not what the case says. If you read it, it's very clear that it says it is a way to prove sex discrimination. So that's absolutely part of it. The other part is that case was not a majority opinion. It was a plurality. So that means there were only four justices who signed on. So even if you wanted to read it wrong, it's still not controlling law because it wasn't the court's holding. So that's kind of getting into the weeds and some of the legal points here, but it really is misreading the court case. But for me, the more problematic aspect is that they're actually treating it as stereotypical to say that this man must follow the male dress code because the ramifications are huge. It means a school must use pronouns that match what the individual wants them to use, even if they are not accurate, that the individual in a school must be allowed to use the male bathroom, even if they are actually a girl, because otherwise it's sex stereotyping. And the breadth of this is really quite amazing.
So you say that there's a problem here, both factually and legally. What's the factual problem with these attempts to apply Title VII and IX to transgender individuals?
So the factual is just that you can't change your sex. It's impossible. You can change the cosmetics of it, but you cannot change your sex. So from a factual scientific matter, when they say it's stereotyping to say, and I think there was another case that I quoted that said a woman with male genitalia, that's an impossibility. It's not, there obviously are some conditions, but that is not what we're talking about when we're talking about transgender individuals. So it's an impossibility from a factual perspective.
And legally, the problem here seems to be that sex is being equated with transgender conditions. Is that as simple as it gets?
Well, it's really that they're saying, by definition, discriminating against someone who is transgendered is sex discrimination, because it is based on your view of what sex means. I guess that's kind of the rationale that they're using. And it is really just one fallacy after another, that if sex means male or female, that's one thing. But they're going the next step and saying it's just a stereotype of what male or female means. And when there's someone who's transgender, they are just not complying with a stereotype. And again, that's just not factually true. It is an individual who is maintaining that they are of the opposite sex.
Does this have the effect of not only diluting but undermining the good purposes of Title VII and Title IX?
Well, I think so, especially when you look at Title IX, you can see the ramifications quite clearly when you see men competing against women. There was the case, I can't remember if it was in Oklahoma, where there was a high school boy who was competing and won the state track meet, and he was competing against female runners. So you can see from the competitive, from the sports, just very clearly how that dilutes it. But from the standpoint of the equal employment opportunities for men and women, it's just getting blurred as to what was the goal of the statute.
Talk also about a Seventh Circuit decision, Whitaker versus Kenosha Unified School. What is,
sure,
bearing does that have on this?
Right. So that was in the context of Title IX as opposed to Title VII. It was a girl who was in high school who had adopted the identity of a boy and wanted to be allowed to use the male facilities. And the Seventh Circuit held that it was a violation of Title IX in order for the school to say no, that you have to either use the girl facilities or you may use private restroom facilities in the school. That case was appealed to the Supreme Court, but before the Supreme Court was able to take the case, the school district settled. And it makes sense that they settled from a financial perspective, because their insurance policy was paying, and they, if they lost, would have to pay attorney's fees that can rack up pretty easily. So the Supreme Court had a chance to weigh in at that point, and it got pulled. So that is not binding any longer, merely because it was pulled, but the rationale is going to continue to be applied. So what you saw in the funeral home case, you're seeing in the school cases, and eventually the Supreme Court is going to have to weigh in on this.
Now, we've talked about several cases in several levels of the federal court system. Have other courts maintained some sanity, as you say in your piece?
Right. And most of those cases that you kind of see that sanity were a little bit older cases, because the last few years is where you've seen the push to have transgender individuals protected under Title VII and Title IX. But you have case law where the language is pretty clear. There's a big distinction between saying a woman is not acting with enough femininity and where you have a woman who is adopting the persona of being a man. And that's exactly the point, that there is a distinction between the two. And what you are seeing now is not situations where a woman is acting with more masculine traits and being discriminated against. It's individuals who are trying to force employers or schools to accept and to affirm a gender that's not accurate, a sex that is not accurate. And one of the things that I mentioned in the article that the cases haven't been looking at is the ramifications from the First Amendment perspective, that in order to fully affirm for these individuals, it means including calling them by pronouns that are not accurate. And the government can't force us to speak and to speak in a way that we find offensive, and in this case, that is not true. So they haven't looked at that aspect of it, and that's really going to be problematic when you have a school saying, you must refer to him as a her, and a student or a teacher saying, I will not do that because that's not truth. That's not accurate.
So this has the potential of becoming, at least maybe from a legal response to the imposition of these kinds of strictures on speech, a genuine free speech case.
I think so, and that's one of the things that I was rather amazed when I looked at the funeral home case. It's not also not just the speech, but also the religious, because there are people who have a biblically formed faith base will look at Genesis. God created man in his image. He created him, man, male and female, and say, that also violates my religious belief to say that a man can become a woman. So this actually does tee up a complete conflict between speech and religious rights on one hand and what someone believes is their right to force others to affirm their identity. And there really are a lot of conflicts here that haven't come to the forefront yet.
So I'm wondering, and this is from purely from a layperson's perspective with respect to the legal issues, why aren't the activists who are attempting to work, kind of squeeze a transgendered situation into 7 and 9, why aren't they simply attempting to write some new federal law that specifically refers to transgender individuals, or to amend existing law to specifically refer to such individuals?
Well, because it wouldn't pass. And that's why they are going through the courts as they do with pretty much everything else, that if the legislation is such that could not be passed, then we'll force it into the court system. So that really is what it comes down to.
So they know that, at least for the time being, either the legislators or the populace still kind of views this transgenderism as an anomaly and not reflective of reality.
Right, right. Absolutely. And there are states that do actually have that as a protected class. And some of the states, such as California, will say that that means you have to treat them as the sex that they identify as. Others just protect it as a generic class, which also illustrates why sex definitely does not include someone who is a transgender individual, because if they wanted to put it in there, they could. The silence is telling.
Finally, you said that the Supreme Court will eventually have to weigh in on this. What will be the issues for the Supreme Court to consider? And since the Supreme Court has dealt a lot with both Title VII and Title IX, and not with respect to transgenderism, how do you expect them
sure.
to rule?
So the issue that they'll have to look at first off is whether or not sex within the meaning of Title VII and Title IX includes a protection for transgender individuals. And then from there, what does that mean if it does? Does it mean that you just can't refuse to hire someone because they are a transgender individual? How does it apply in dress codes? How does it apply in speech? And part of it's going to be what case gets teed up there. So if it is this funeral home case, it could present those issues there because it did involve a dress code. As far as the prediction, that's hard because right now we have kind of Kennedy's always sitting there in the middle, and you just never know which way he's going to wake up in the morning, and he doesn't have a real overwhelming, cohesive constitutional outlook on things. It's more, how do I feel about this? And the Constitution and statutory interpretation, they usually are similar approaches. So it's hard to say what the Supreme Court would do. If they're looking solely at the language, the honest approach is that it's not protected. This is for Congress to look at. But I think, unfortunately, it's going to be a close call.
Margo Cleveland spent almost 25 years as a permanent law clerk to a federal appellate judge, former full-time faculty member and current adjunct instructor at the College of Business at the University of Notre Dame, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column there titled, what the federal courts are getting wrong about gender discrimination in the workplace. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Margo, thank you.
Thanks so much.
When we come back, I heard these comments being made by evangelical supporters of then-candidate Trump early on in the campaign. They went away and then they've come back recently, especially since President Trump recognized the U.S. Embassy's right to exist in Jerusalem as the capital of the state of Israel. A comparison between President Trump and Old Testament King Cyrus. Who was Old Testament King Cyrus and why is the comparison being made? Does it hold scriptural water? We'll answer those questions with Dr. Andrew Steinman right after this.
Boys and boys will be girls. It's a mixed up, muddled up, shook up world. It's up and roll. La 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 la.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.